Hello, come in. Lie down. Relax. Take a deep breath in. And now breathe out. We'll be your therapists today. You're listening to Triathlon Therapy.
That's too much time. Look at Steve McKenna. Steve, what are you doing, Steve? That's too much time. Advantage Reed.
G'day all, welcome back. Triathlon Therapy. We've got the usual head of Clint Rollings with us and Liz Blatchford, RPG coach, and also multiple world championship Ironman podium getter, and as well as many other achievements in her career. So we thought we'd love to get Liz back on because she gives insights into the female pro racing that obviously we don't have. Thanks for coming on, guys. Nice was on the weekend. Before we even crack into what the race was, how the race went down and all those sort of things, I just realized my microphone was all the way down. Should I start again?
No, that's fine. Keep going. This is okay. Standard for us, mate.
Let me check that it's even the right. Yeah, cool. Oh, man. This is such an amateur podcast. Okay. People were pretty unhappy. A lot of people were unhappy because it's breaking the tradition of not racing in Kona. And my opinion was always Nice is a fantastic location. It's a super challenging race, different conditions, different course to Kona. I still don't agree with having split women and men's races, but I love the idea of mixing up the Kona race location. And I think the more that Ironman stick with it, the more that it'll become more historic, have tradition, people will start to aim for it more. I think it's just got everything that a really challenging course should have. Like Kona's obviously got its own set of challenges, but the challenges for this race are different. And over time, I think it'll build up the mystique around this race as well. What do you think, Liz?
Yeah, I do agree. And one huge bonus after watching that race and that coverage was just that for the pro women, this race was purely about them and they got the coverage that they've long since deserved. I know even nearly every Ironman I ever raced, and it was racing together with the men. Obviously, that's great in some aspects, but nearly every single race we did, the pro women's race was affected by the men's field. So whether it was the tail end male pros or the lead age group men, it was affecting the women's race. And so we didn't have any of that. And also the women just got, you know, their day in the spotlight as well, which, yeah, I think they deserve. And it was really great from that point of view.
Yeah. Thanks for that. Clint, what did you think? Have you changed your tune on moving away from Kona, or what are your overall thoughts?
I very much agree with what Liz said in terms of like, it's great to see the women, like the dynamic of the race, not be affected by the strong age group men and the not so strong pro men. But I'm just a Kona frother. I wish that we could just race. I wish it, like, what was it, 2 years ago when we were there and it was the Thursday and the Saturday. If they can make that work, like, give the females what they deserve and that's a fair, clean race. And then they can sell slots for the whole year to, like, I think that's more of an enticing thing for people racing Ironman. So the females on the Thursday, men on the Saturday or vice versa, however they want to do it, but they really get their own race. In saying that, I feel like, there was different challenges on the weekend, which we'll run through, but and I did like, and Reedy, you'd agree with this, that the different challenges bring different winners to the forefront, I think, compared to, like, it's not just a genetics test in Hawaii as well as an aerobic test.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess kicking off, the swim was interesting from the start. I think the first main thing was that Lucy Charles was out of the race. She had a calf injury. Her not racing changes the dynamics quite a lot because, you know, I don't know, Liz, you might be able to expand, but there's probably not many women who would have got out of the water with her. Do you think, I mean, especially because it was made a wetsuit swim, perhaps some of the ladies might have been able to stay on her feet because it does change that dynamic quite a lot. I think it changed the dynamic on race day because, you know, non athletes who aren't known for their swim were actually very close to the, like they were in touch. Kate Matthews was, I think, only 30 seconds back from the leaders, which is normally she's got a lot more ground to make up than that. So yeah, I guess that changed things a lot. It's a bit like, you know, we know that the wetsuit does close the gap from the best swimmers to the lesser good swimmers.
I have a bit of an opinion on that. I don't actually think that that's like across the board. So I don't know if you guys remember Jodie Swallow, who used to race. She was one of the best swimmers in triathlon, and she loved racing in a wetsuit. I personally loved racing in a wetsuit. So yeah, it's a weird one. Like some really great swimmers also love racing in wetsuits, but I do know some of the very lean girls, and potentially if they haven't swum all their lives, they, you know, that flotation is really helpful. I did see an interview, it was in German, but I got the gist of it by Laura, and she was stoked that it was a wetsuit swim. So yeah, and I think it was a very late call, wasn't it? They were all expecting non-wetsuit, and it was only on the race morning that they found out they were in wetsuits.
Yeah, exactly. And Tim Don touched on it in the last episode of our podcast, was about how you could drop the weight down a little bit further if you're a runner, or, you know, less of a swimmer, knowing that it was wetsuit. So I agree with you totally. Some athletes who are excellent swimmers still might like the wetsuit swim. They might prefer that, but it just means it is harder to get away from other swimmers because it just closes the gap a little more. Depends a little bit on your technique too. I was neither a good swimmer in a wetsuit or without one, but I still preferred not to have one because I really rely on my kick. Yeah. And so, yeah, whereas other swimmers, you can have a messier stroke, a really high turnover in a wetsuit, and just because of the buoyancy and when you're on feet, you can stay with people a little bit better. Clint.
Looking at the results from the weekend, like Laura Phillip was, I looked back just to try and see some patterns from last year to this year's race, and she was 7.5 minutes down in Hawaii last year, and she was 4 minutes down this year. Yeah. So to your point, Liz, that some people probably benefit a lot more than others. And the other ones, as you said, Reedy Cat Matthews and Chelsea Sodaro was right at the front where
minutes on Lucy. So, you know, take Lucy out of the equation.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is tricky, but yeah.
Yeah, and then onto the bike, like I guess first, so we lost Lucy, obviously a big pre-race favourite, and then your heart had to go out for Anne Haug, who had an unfixable tyre 200 metres into the ride. And when I watched that, I was like, this is why pro triathlon is just such a roller coaster, right? Like you can do a whole year of working towards an event and then something outside your control just takes away the dream for that year. I almost am surprised though that it was unfixable. And how could the course not be? Do you know if it was a slash, Clint, that did the tire or what the actual issue was?
Yeah, it was a slash. And then, I mean, Ironman got a little bit of criticism there because she was one of the, like in the second group, and there was no mechanic there to help her at all. So she just stood there helplessly. They had a camera in front of her filming the whole thing, but no mechanic there to help her. She is – the same thing happened, I think it was in Singapore, when she got – she had a camera in front of her and she should have panicked. 99% of people in the world would have panicked, and she just stayed so calm when her tube dropped down out of behind her saddle. And similar in this scenario, she just remained calm. And then when she knew her race was over, just handed her bike over the fence, jumped the fence and walked away from the camera, which is just like, and then one of the notes I actually had before this was both her and Lucy coming on the coverage. I mean, Lucy had a day to deal with it, right? But Anne was absolutely primed to race. And then 2 hours later, she actually came on the coverage and gave her thoughts on the race. Like that is so professional and so impressive. So sad to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what I found really interesting once they hit the bike ride, Marjolaine Pierre, I hope I'm saying that correctly, because she was at the front of the swim, and it was like a 3-minute gap within 40K. And I know she's probably a great rider. But then when I looked at the coverage, it's like there's a motorbike 20, 30 meters in front and it changes the dynamic so much. And I know I always go on about this and it's a hard one because obviously I don't know if it was a lead vehicle. It looked like a lead vehicle to me, but it drastically changes the race. Yeah. And I could be totally wrong. She could have just ridden way better power than everyone else, but it's a big gap in 40K. So that was interesting to me. And it also was interesting to me too, that when Kat Matthews and Laura Firrip finally did bridge up to Pierre, suddenly their gap was extraordinary on everyone, including Pierre. And I think I just think people need to understand how big a difference that lead motorbike can make. And I really feel like lead vehicles are so important, but they need to be like 500 meters up the road, checking that the course is clear. So that was something that I noticed. Obviously still amazing riding from Marjolaine to get into that position. And I guess the thing that I found fascinating was, I mean, we'll talk more about Laura Phillips and obviously she won the race, but she seemed to have given every amount of thought to the detail of what bike she was going to ride, her setup. I know from even her front end, she managed to strip, I think, a kilo off her front end or something crazy. The thing for lighter athletes, and everyone thinks, oh, they'll be a great climber. And historically, especially in the men's race, the best climbers in the sport are the guys that are sort of 80 kilos, 75 kilos plus, because they're having to push up a hill a 10, 11 kilo time trial bike. It's at least, 10, 11 once you put all the bottles and things on it. And that's fine for a stronger athlete, a bigger athlete, but you put that on a 55, 60 kilo female athlete, suddenly it's very difficult to use your power to weight to your advantage, because you're not on a 6 kilo bike like you are in, UCI cycling rules. So really smart from Laura, I thought, to have that sort of setup. She had an incredibly aero bike, but also went to the details of making it super light. And then, that bike ride, obviously phenomenal riding from her. We know Kat Matthews is a fantastic biker too. So watching those two take the lead and then stay together. And then technically, of course, you got to be fantastic on this course, which is a whole nother element to, pro racing, that some events you've needed, but for the majority of triathlon events, you could get away with not having the best skills, but amazing descending from both of them. What are your guys' thoughts watching that part of the bike and how much they seem to dominate the ride once they eventually caught up to Pierre?
You go, Liz.
Back to your point on the motorbikes, actually, early on, I saw, I think it was like 5 or 6 police motos in there in that top 10 females. And it is such a shame. And I know you talk about it often, Reedy, but it's a shame that it keeps happening. And like you said, it was not needed. The course was closed. Having that many police motorbikes is both dangerous and it's changing the race. So that was frustrating. They did, I think, for the most part, get out of the way after that initial 10K. But, yeah, still, it's a bit of a shame that that's still happening. Your points to riding, having the lighter bike, riding a heavy TT bike up those steep hills when you're – look, I would dare say Anne and Laura – Anne's probably below 50 kilograms. Laura's probably right around 50 kilos. These are very, very light women. As you say – their power to weight is strong, but if they're carrying a heavy bike up the hill, it's pointless. It sounds like Laura did everything right there. I'm sure most of the women probably were looking at all those finer details. Laura has always been really great technically. I've raced with her back when I was racing. She was just sort of emerging in the sport, and I remember racing Wiesbaden, which is a fairly technical bike course over near Hamburg, and was like, well, who's this woman? She's got great skills and, put those into play on the day. Kat, one of the gutsiest races out there. And I just think raced it like a real race, potentially, just didn't necessarily pace her own race, and maybe that caught up with her at the end of the marathon. But just all credit to Kat and her gutsiness. And, everyone knows that about Kat, and she shows it time in, time out. But yeah, it was. I loved watching that race. It just showed that the level of the women's sports is going to new levels every year, and Laura's performance was phenomenal across the board.
I'm not sure how early both Kat and Laura got there, but they must have known that either they're just absolute maniacs or they knew the course really well, because on the descents, they actually put time into Marjolaine, who's actually grew up on those roads. Like, it was a Rudy von Berg-esque story. Like, she knew the roads very, very well. And yeah, when they got to the descents, she was just out the back. So either those guys took the time to learn the course as well, or they're just crazy. But in terms of,
I'd be shocked if they hadn't learned that descent off by heart.
In terms of the early on police motorbikes and stuff that you were talking about, Liz, there was also a few, and they did their best to not show it on camera through some parts, but there was a few interactions where, like, there might have been Nikki Bartlett nearly got knocked off. Yeah, like she had to swerve to go around a public car that was on the road. Like, I try my best not to be negative about this stuff, but like, it's very, very concerning. If the pros are getting their races interrupted through intersections like that, you can only imagine that it's getting less and less strict as the age group has come through. And that's just like super concerning. I mean, you know, it's happened in Hawaii a couple of times, and then you see it on the coverage all the time. It's just, yeah, you just want it to be better and more professional.
Liz, just touching on your point about most of the athletes would have taken lighter bike options and things like that. It was actually interesting when I looked through a lot of the setups. I don't think a lot of women had actually changed much. There's a lot of full, there's it was all full TT setups, which makes sense because it's still a lot of riding where, you know, you're going to need a, you know, the aerodynamics of a TT bike wins out. But there's a lot of disc wheels, which we know is marginal gain compared to, you know, and you can knock 300 or 400 grams just off your wheel choice on the back by going to a lighter deep rear. There
There
was,
was
yeah, I'm not
also,
sure. I'm not sure it was. I'm sure Anne would have had it very sorted. Laura obviously did. I think what was, I just, and also just going back to, I will get into the run a little bit more, but yeah, that little bit of mispacing, I think, from Kat, you just looked like she was working that little bit harder to stay with Laura. And instead of potentially just relying on her, you know, incredible run to do the damage later in the race. But obviously, you know, we've all raced and ignored, you know, smart pacing for the sake of trying to stay with the leader. So
Of course, yeah.
no judgment there. And obviously, like you said, such a gutsy racer and had some bad spots on the marathon. And
You
you can
look at
always tell when someone's, you know, a courageous racer because they don't panic. It's like, okay, really bad spot. I might have to walk for a bit. Let's get my shit together and then I'll get back to work, which is exactly what she did on the run.
Both Laura rode a 502, Kat rode a 505, and then I'd say the average bike time for the females was 520 or above. So they were just significantly quicker. And that's, you know, that's got to take its toll, right? Well, 253 still. She was fighting from like mid-teens in the marathon with cramp. And you just think, oh, her day's done, and still fights out for a 253. It's just
Amazing.
ridiculous.
It was. But did you see how fast they ran that first 10K? They were running like 340 Ks, and they were on pace for like a low 230 marathon. And I was like, oh, someone's going to crack that here. So credit to them, like, you know, although Kat cracked, she ran like a low 250 marathon. It's bloody incredible.
Yeah. Moving on to the run. I guess the first of all, we should before we finish the bike that we know with world championship races too, like a lot of the people watching might think, wow, they were the other pros must have not ridden that well. But they might have, you know, there is a big advantage being at the front of the race. You do have media motorbikes next to you. You know, I've touched on it many times, but the few times I've been at the front of championship races, I notice even with motorbikes alongside you filming, your power for speed just gets, your power drops, your speed goes up. It makes a big difference. So some of those athletes might not have had that much of a deficit in terms of their power output. It's just the nature of championship races until we one day move to like drones filming everything. Onto the run, like you said, Liz, far out. They were hooking at the start of that run. Laura said she felt the bike, you know, on the first getting off and starting the run. She certainly didn't seem to show it with the way she was running. But yeah, absolutely, like, incredible pacing, and to not blow up is also amazing. So
but yeah, you could see just like how much they were actually racing that race. So Laura forgot her sunnies and hat and didn't even go back to get them. Was like, yep, I'm gonna run this marathon with nothing. I was like, oh, that looks painful, you know, just you know, no shelter, and but didn't want to give up a second to Kat to go grab them. So yeah, it was definitely on, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. 2:44 when you're apparently feeling your legs at the start of the marathon, that's yeah, it's just insane. I yet again look through some of the results from last year versus this year, because I'd had a few comments that, like, oh, you know, they look like their marathons were a bit slower. Well, there was still, there's five sub three marathons in Nice, and there was only four in Kona last year. So, like, the guys who were on were still very on. And it's, yeah, it's just the ones who probably, like you said earlier, Liz, may have ridden a bit too hard in certain areas. They're gonna pay for that later in the day.
Yeah. Look, on paper, that, you know, should be a faster run course, but after that bike course, it, you know, yeah, it sort of levels it out again, doesn't it? Kind of.
Yeah. If, especially if you don't have the right gearing and you end up doing, you know, a long time, you know, 10, 20 RPM below what you would do in Kona, that just really, it saps muscle glycogen, but it also, you know, just leaves the muscles so fatigued. Mm-hmm. Laura went on, you know, one of the best runs I've ever seen to run a 2:44. I guess you could say it's not a surprise. I think that the performance was surprising in that it's just so amazing. Like, it's, but in terms of her winning, I don't think that's a huge shock. You know, she's consistently been knocking at the door of big race wins or, and winning a lot of other races.
Yeah.
She does a lot of her training in St. Moritz. So 1800 meters of altitude, we know that's going to give a big advantage, not only from like a red blood cell perspective, but also if you're training there, you're going to get really good at those sort of rides.
Yeah.
It's just part of what you would do every time you go out on the bike. I think, yeah, so that was, I mean, just absolutely amazing. She looks so smooth. I would say, you know, where you mentioned, Clint, that some athletes will come to the fore in a race like this and not so much in Kona, I feel like she's the sort of athlete will perform well on any course anywhere. I think then, of course, we touched on Kat Matthews. I think we have to remind people she was hit by a car 18 months ago and was, you know, very injured from that. It's been an incredible comeback. And even though she runs so well, like, her average run volume is like 30 to 40 kilometers per week. I'm not sure if that's because of injuries or what the reason is, but Liz, you would know, like, what sort of run mileage were you doing when you were sort of right at the top of the sport in Ironman?
To be honest, I was on the lower end. I was pretty injury prone. I did sort of, my biggest run weeks would have been 60 to 70K, but yeah, Kat's well under that. But there was definitely women, I know Marinda and some others were running closer to 100K a week. And I'd say these days with the shoes and the better padding shoes, you can probably, I'd say everyone's run mileage would have gone up maybe 10 to 20%. But yeah, that's really low if that's genuine what Kat's doing. And that's just, she's crazy talented and probably an incredible VO2.
Yeah, I think, sorry, there's a garbage truck picking up trash cans outside. I think it also comes down to what your history is with running. You know, like, Sebastian Kinley won Kona off 30 or 40K a week as well. He can touch on this when he eventually comes on the show. He's promised me multiple times. Oi, Sebi, get back to my messages. But, you know, there's other ways you can condition the legs, you know, for those that are really injury prone, you know, heavy strength training. I know Sebi used to do, it was like 4 minute Ks or quicker only, because it was, he just had to do the work to condition his muscles, but he had such good aerobic conditioning. That wasn't the problem. So it was just conditioning the legs to the marathon. Yeah. Yeah, that history in the sport just makes a big difference. I'm sure, did Kat come from running?
I'm not sure. She's not sure of the history, but it's just, she runs very well. Like, she's not your typical like runner's build, but just gets it done so efficiently. And then, if she's only really doing that amount of Ks, which you can only take it on face value, that's insane, because fighting so early on and then just continuing to be economical when she could move was amazing.
Yeah.
Especially when I think you were running 160K a week to do a sub 330, wasn't it, Clint?
Mate, no comment.
Okay. So Chelsea Sodaro ran through. Gutsy race from her. Changing coach. Interestingly, she changed bikes from Canyon to Pinarello. I do wonder whether, obviously the Canyon's an extremely aero bike. I wonder whether she went to Pinarello because it is probably the lightest time trial bike before you do a heap of changes.
Apparently, so, she couldn't get comfortable on the Canyon.
Is that what she said?
Yeah, the stack and reach just didn't work for her. So she was on the non-UCI version because she could get closer on the Canyon. And, you know, you can kind of snicker at that or whatever, but when you look at, she was originally on the BMC and she looked actually really comfortable on it. And the footage that you would see of her on the Canyon, it didn't look great. And then seeing her on that new Pinarello, she was at one with the bike. So potentially it was a good move. And she did spend, although she would have had, you know, media around her, she spent a lot of that ride on her own. So
yeah.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think actually Chelsea kind of went back to sort of the method that won her Kona, just sort of raced her own race a lot more and, yeah, sort of having that guts, sort of that fortitude to be like, I'm going to do my own race. I'm not going to go with people that's going to take me outside of my zones and, you know, just having that faith in your own ability. And it looks like she raced that way and, yeah, pushed all day and managed to run herself into third. So, yeah, great race by Chelsea.
I think Marjolaine Pierre, only 24 years old, to finish fourth place. And she just raced it really gutsy, like a 24-year-old would, but normally they get punished with a 15th place. So she's actually coached by Reese Barclay, which is Lucy's husband, which I found interesting. Obviously, both Reese and Lucy would have picked up so much from being at the top of the sport. And she is going to be... Yeah. You'd have to say she's going to be one in line for a likely championship win down the track. So,
well, yeah. if she cooked the start of that bike like we think she did, and then she when she got caught, she actually lifted intensity or tried to stay with them for as much as she could, like pretty sporadic kind of riding, and then ran a 302. And she hasn't done many Ironman. It might be her second Ironman. Yeah, insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. 24, you've got a fair few chances ahead of you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think some honourable mentions, like I guess for us as Australians, Penny Slater, it was awesome to see her do well. She's she's a smart athlete, a coach herself, seventh place, and she had a femoral stress fracture earlier in the year. So that always takes a lot to come back from. Just great to see her do well. She's very pumped at the finish. Maybe we can get her on to give us a bit of a chat of how it went. Lottie Williams, who's an honourable Australian, she seems to be here a lot. She was up there, I think, in the top 10. Let me check.
I think she was seventh.
Yeah, eighth place.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and, obviously, you know, we see her in racing in Australia a lot, so it's cool to see her do well. She's 40 years old, but still, at the top level of the sport, so... That's great. And then I think 10th was Hannah Berry. Hannah's
got a couple of flats too.
She did. Yeah. Oh, really? I missed that bit.
Yeah. So in the front group when they were, pretty early on and got two slow leaks and had to sort. So to stay ahead in the game after that is amazing.
Yeah.
Finished it off well. And then I think, interesting note, like Hawaii, the top 10 were 26 minutes apart. Over there, it was 47 minutes apart from first to 10th. So, like, it seems like looking at the dynamic of the race, if you took Lucy out of the race last year in Hawaii, like, almost the top 10 come off the bike within about 5 minutes. Like, they're all kind of really close together, where this race, it was just like, little clumps on the way. So, you've really got to keep your head in the game. And so, to face adversity like that with Hannah and still be able to solo it, and just get it done is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the reason I'm such a fan of this course. We know that in Kona, the group you're with makes a big difference. It used to be a lot windier over there than it is now. It's part of the reason I'd push for 20 meters with pros, because it would change the dynamic of the race. It really allows the race to split up more. But yeah, I think it's interesting with Nice. I think there's a, it just shows that it can be those sort of bike courses. You can really see big gaps, and it's pretty impressive too from the athletes who kept their head in the game, especially when there was a lot of withdrawals. I think it could be pretty depressing getting off the bike knowing that someone's already 10K into the run. So, yeah. Overall thoughts on the whole race?
The only I will be slightly negative. 1,100 finishes only. I know at the start you were mega positive about it, Reedy, and said stick with it and the mystique will probably come and people will want to go and do the race, but I don't think it will.
Well, I disagree. It'll just take time. You just can't, you couldn't, how many finishes were there the third year Kona existed? You know, like it was not even a thing. You've got to build the history to make it special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, you also just got to look at participation numbers. Like in most Ironman events that I've been to where I've actually paid attention, it, you know, the women are around sitting around 20%. So, you know, it's, the sport is growing, but in, yeah, it's still very male dominated, and yeah, I hope it'll grow. Like you say, Reedy, I have a perspective from a female athlete I coach, Jess Schaefer. She raced Nice, and for her, that bike course was taking her 100% out of her comfort zone, and there was a lot of sort of anxiety and panic going into this race, and I just kept trying to reassure her, trained her really specifically for it, and she got through it and, you know, had a bit of a hell of a time on the bike. And but even 2 days post race, she's got that sort of reflection that she's taken on something that she never would have, you know, a course like that. It's, you know, because Ironman World Champs isn't a challenge enough, it's a, it's a challenge that's yeah, just really taking women outside of their comfort zone and something that, yeah, they potentially never would have taken on. Pretty epic. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that pretty much wraps it up. I mean, yeah, congrats to everyone who raced. It, like you said, Liz, it's a big undertaking, especially for Aussies, I think, or people that don't grow up on those sort of terrain. It's it would scare the hell out of me. I know that much. we did have Western Sydney 70.3 on the weekend that I was at. Just a few comments from that. I mean, first of all, the biggest thing I was stoked with that Ironman did was they put on a sprint race. And I guess it touches on that female, male, the male dominance in the sport. Is I feel like obviously it's still a lot harder for women to take on Ironman if they're doing the bulk of the child raising. You know, it is slowly changing over time, but it's tough to fit in all that training. And so I just think it's great. And I've always said this, I just think sprint distance triathlons, we need them a lot more in sports. And it was so cool to see at Western Sydney, they actually had a sprint race. And it shouldn't just be for people that, oh, this is to lead them in. Like it's going to have that effect, but shouldn't just be to lead them into triathlon and give them a taste of it. It should, I'd love to see it also become a competitive race in its own right. So that people who are like, oh, I can't keep doing Ironman, they've got a thing they can do for 6 to 12 months. I'm going to race some sprints for 6 months, regroup, get my partner back on side with triathlon, and then I might go do something longer. So that was really cool to see.
Just two quick ones on that, Reedy. One, was it run like did it start before the 70.3, or how did they work that out? And
yeah,
two,
it was started. It started before the 70.3, started later. Yeah. It didn't seem to affect the 70.3 race at all.
So that means that they all finish, they're all on a high, and then they hang around and watch the 70.3 finish. And then, you know, that might be the only thing that's attainable for some of those people at the moment. So it's like they can hang around and watch that there's all shapes and sizes out there doing a 70.3, and they go, I might do a couple of these sprint distances and then build up to doing it, because if those guys can do it, I can. That's really cool. And the only, yet again, here I come with a negative. Do you know how much it was to enter?
Not sure.
I'd love for it to be like, I'd love for them to just make it very, very cheap, like just to cover costs, to get people back into racing, because I think one of the limiting factors these days is the cost of the sport, you know? And so if they can do it for, you know, just a break even to get more people out on course and kind of funneled into the sport would be awesome, because I'm shocked, and I must just be getting old, but I'm shocked at like the price of some of the races these days. So I'd love it to be really affordable.
That brings me to I wrote two blogs in my head while I was running along the Western Sydney bike course. I was like, there's a couple of things that need to change. And I'm a massive fan of what Ironman do. I wouldn't have had a career without without the Ironman series. They've put triathlons all around the world. I always think there's a few things that could be tweaked to really help them stay dominant or grow even further. And the number one thing is we want to try and find ways to not make it a rich person only sport. And so that goes to exactly what you're saying, Clint. Like, I would start with, get rid of swim skins. Why do we have to have a $350 suit when we can just race in our tri suit like we used to? I think we need to have more restrictions around the bike tech. And I love bike tech, but we can't have people that can get an advantage out of spending 20 grand on a bike compared to someone who's only got 3 or 4 grand to spend. And if you bring in more like UCI restrictions, then it's like, okay, cool. There's not the same difference in the tech. There'll always be ways you can get faster, like tire choice, tubes, but those are like $100, those things matter. So I really agree with you, Clint. This says us, we are a premium coaching product too, but we're now offering different products to try and bring people in who can't afford one-on-one coaching too. I'll get to that in a sec. I've got a little offer for you guys. And then the other thing I think that really, the biggest problem I think that Ironman have, and they can bring a lot of people into the sport. It's keeping the old dogs happy to keep coming back year after year. And what we see as a coaching company is we get an athlete, they're totally frothing on Ironman 70.3s. They get better. They start to become quite good on the bike. And then they realize, it didn't end up a fair race because there's, it's a flat course. A lot of people, someone who legally or illegally, intentionally or unintentionally gets a big advantage off other people. Then they get frustrated that their bike's not being rewarded for all the work they've put in. And then they sort of get a bit disillusioned and move on. And so I have I've always had ideas around how drafting could be better policed. I think the motorbike system, I don't know if it's Triathlon Australia who has to have it that way or whether it's Ironman, but having a loud motorbike pull up on a group so everyone can spread out, we watched it on the course. It doesn't work. Like, we don't need people out there. You just need to set up timing mats that are 200 meters apart. And if someone's within 2 seconds there and they're within 2 seconds again, boom, it's a penalty. Or you set up, I'd love to be an undercover drafting marshal. I get out on a time trial bike. I got my cards and I can just ride past people and go, you. and there's lots of other ideas. Like the race ranger is a great idea, but you shouldn't have to have an official out there to call that it's a penalty. And I think if we can start to fix that up, people won't get frustrated who start to become really good cyclists. So they're the two things I see, like, for what I think is an amazing product and something obviously we have a job because of it. But I feel like there's some little tweaks just to keep people enthusiastic, not just to go through that 2 or 3 year cycle and then they move on. I'd like to see people, stay for that 10 or 15 years, because we know that the longer they're in the sport, the better they get. And you want them to get rewarded for all the work they've put in. Sorry, a little rant there.
I was going to let Liz, do you want to have a rant before I have a bit of a rant?
Oh, no, I'm good. I'm just imagining Reedy like trying to race everyone, give out penalties on his TT bike.
Maybe I'll get like a silent. E-bike. Oh, the other option actually that reminds me of that is, why not, if you have to stick with motorbikes, we have to find a way that they're not super loud so everyone hears them from 200
well,
meters.
Well, electric.
Electric bikes.
I think better option, Reedy, would be a dozen or so people on course with paintball guns in the bush. And if you pull up at the end of the ride and you've got paint on you because you've been shot by the draft marshals, then you've got a certain shame. Penalty. It's a walk of shame covered in paint. Okay. But back to the sprint distance thing, Reed, let's just have a blanket rule of no carbon. You're not allowed carbon in your shoes or carbon in your bikes, carbon on your wheels.
It'll probably end up more expensive to find non-carbon things these days.
There'd only be one person who'd go to the nth degree to try and do that, man. It'd be you. it's good to see that Western Sydney, from all accounts, I mean, there were still batches of drafting ready, but it was a bit fairer in certain spots from what
no,
I've
I think it was a great race. I, you know, it's all in all, I think it was actually a really well run event. People were chuffed with it in general who I spoke to. We'll be back there next year because the RPG guys love that race. So the only thing I do notice is out of all the other races, speaking of men and women racing, like there are no women racing that event. And I think it might be because maybe a lot of women, like, I need to go to a holiday destination to race. And a lot of men are like, I just want a really fast time to please my ego. I don't know. I was sitting around chatting to all the RPG athletes after the race. I'm like, wow, it looks like we only allow men into our team, but we just can't get any women to race that one.
So on that note, if there's any ladies out there looking for coaching, please reach out.
Yeah.
What was your offer, Reid?
So, I was going to say, anyone who's interested, we do sell a lot of plans online. You know, part of what used to fuel my insomnia was I was part of the problem with helping make triathlon too expensive for people with, you know, the cost of our one-on-one coaching. Unfortunately, we don't take on heaps of athletes. We work really closely with them. We try and go to a lot of athletes. So it isn't cheap. So I did create a lot of programs, you know, that will work well for most people, especially if they buy Training Peaks Premium, adjust the sessions themselves. And then we have this RPG membership, which is if you buy the program, you will get a few weeks of support with that membership. So we have constantly putting up posts, informative posts. Athletes can ask questions that the coaches will write an answer to. You can search other questions. So hopefully you're not putting up a question that's already been answered in detail before. So anyone who is keen to have a test of that membership, or even look at our training plans, email me at info@rpgcoaching.com. I'm going to give you 50% off the membership for 3 months. Bianca's going to spew when she hears this. She's like, thinking, what are you doing? I'm like, I just came up with it right then on the moment. Yeah, 50% off for 3 months to be on the membership. You just got to email me and I'll give you the triathlon therapy code.
Danny, just edit that bit out at the end, all right?
Another great benefit of being on the RPG membership is the meetups around the races. I know a lot of athletes, if it's their first time racing that event, like you guys are always at the events and having your experience there where you guys know the courses and can offer tips, you know, right around race day, that's really valuable too.
Yeah, thanks, Liz. And we've got, you know, partnerships with brands like Atoi, different, you know, discount codes that really pretty much would cover your membership costs by the end of the year if you're a fairly big consumer of items. So
as all triathletes are.
Yeah, as all triathletes need to be. All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on, Liz.
Thanks, Clint. Liz.
You look as good as ever, given that you got a baby. I'm actually shocked that you don't look more tired. So hey,
I'm going okay, but touch wood.
Not fair. All right. I'll chat to you guys later. And thanks for coming on.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, mate.
See ya.